Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
And welcome to New Horror Express, your weekly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's show, I'm chatting to writer-director MJ Dixon about the latest happenings in the Michoverse, the interconnected horror movie universe that was launched by his film Slasher House nearly a decade ago. Over the course of the interview, we talk about the stalled production of Slasher House 3, how close he came to starting filming on the Scarecrow horror Strawman, and the various other Michoverse projects that are currently in early development. Plus, I talked to him about where he and his wife and producing partner, Anna Dixon, find the time to be as prolific as they are with Michael films, why he wanted to create a shared movie universe in the first place, and how he first got into filmmaking. Finally, before we get into the interview, I should flag up that this interview was recorded in April, in case you're confused by some of the references made within it. Anyway, with that all said, now on to the interview with MJ. Hi, MJ. Welcome to New Horror Express.
Hello.
So we've got you on to the show today to talk about, well, to talk about a whole bunch of things about Michael Entertainment, about your filmic universe. It seems like a kind of a good starting place since, according to IMDb, it's currently filming, to maybe start with Slasher House 3. What can you tell us about Slasher House 3?
Well, it's a very complicated question, I think. Mainly just due to, as you can imagine, the pandemic.
Yes.
So, yeah, we were about 2 days out from starting to shoot some stuff for that last March. I think we were. It was around the, I think the 19th of March. We were getting ready to start shooting some footage that would be for Slash House 3, and we just had to pull everything, you know, and it was a real bummer, I think, you know, so that it's all kind of up in the air at the minute. The problem really is that it's the biggest cast we've ever had. It's like there's like 30 main characters in it, and the whole thing is set in like purposefully in like an enclosed space. And so suddenly we found that even when like restrictions started to lift, that it's very difficult to get the amount of people we need into a space like that safe. And so it's really a case of having to kind of put the whole thing on hold, which is really frustrating. So, I mean, that's kind of where it's at in terms of production. But I mean, in terms of what it actually is, it's probably our biggest film that we've ever tried to put together. Like I say, the main cast is like, is 30 people. The whole, for people who aren't familiar with the Slasher House series, the idea was that beforehand we've taken kind of the slasher idea of, you know, a bunch of teenagers trapped in a location with a serial killer and kind of spun it on its head. So the idea was to have one girl against like a bunch of serial killers. And then we continued that in kind of a slightly different way in the second one. But for the third one, we decided we were going to really go over the top. So we decided to times it by five and have 25 serial killers. And then there's our four heroes and our main villain all together in one film. So it's insane. We must be mental to even try making it. But I mean, that's kind of our thing at the minute. It's just pushing to see how far we can stretch things, I guess.
And so is there any plans to to start shooting once restrictions lift, like May, June time?
It's a difficult one, really. For people who don't know as well, we're also expecting a second baby, which is kind of like around this time. So that's the baby's due in June, which kind of puts us out of action for about 6 weeks, usually, we found. And then it's really a case of when will it be safe to do so? Because I think that with even with restriction, you know, there's still a danger. And for people who don't know, we lost a cast member in December to COVID, you know, outside of the film stuff. Paul Rogers, who played Cleaver in Cleavers and was about to reprise his role in Sausage House 3, sadly died in December. It was a huge blow to us as a filmic family and everything. And so it's really, at that point, I said, you know, like, if there's any kind of slight risk, then we have to wait, you know, like, I think that, and because of the size of the film, the size of the film, you know, the kind of film it is and the size of the story and everything and the cast and the crew and there's a whole load of factors there that means that we really have to just kind of see how it goes. I think initially my plan as it currently is, I think is to try and do something smaller in the meantime, you know, so that we're not sat on our, you know, butts waiting for something to happen, something smaller that where we can control those risks, you know, with a loo to come the new year, really hit the ground running with it and go, right, like, you know, everything, I think we'll have a clearer picture by the end of the year of how these things are going to work out, you see. So I think that's initially our plan. And the big problem is that once you get to like November, it's almost impossible to shoot anywhere like that's not like a house, if you know what I mean, like that doesn't have central heating or something like that. If you start, you know, so if you start shooting in warehouses or, you know, or factories or anything like that from like November to February, like your casts just don't thank you for it, you know, and I know that from experience. So it's the thing that we've tried to avoid is filming anything like that in the winter. So I think by the time we've got a clear picture of it, it'll probably be too late to move into, you know, to start shooting then. So I guess the idea would be to come into the new year kind of running at it.
Right. Okay. So you think it'll probably, the filming of Slasher House 3 will probably be postponed into 2022?
Yeah, I mean, that's how it looks at the minute. But things might change. I mean, you know, in June, they could, you know, we could see all this drop and, you know, and if that happens, you know, across the summer, then I can't see any reason why we couldn't pick it up in the autumn. But, you know, with everything that's happened, you want to be cautious, I think. And the people we work with are too important to me because they're not just, you know, they're not actors that we just bring on. Like just about every person that comes onto our set is like a member of our family almost, you know? So it's, I feel like it's my duty to kind of protect them as well. And so I've got to take that into account.
Yeah. Cause I was looking at the kind of cast credits of all of your movies and I was looking at your website and the your own podcast that you have, and it seems like there's a lot of recurring faces there, and you like to have this, you know, a lot of the same faces around you for making these films.
I think when you've got a shared universe, that's kind of going to happen anyway, but also you know, you pick up people who are like-minded along the way, and you kind of, I feel like you kind of tend to want to keep those people around.
Yeah, for sure. And so at least I was going to ask actually first, if, you know, like it's not possible this year, this last year is three, you said that you might pick up something smaller. Was that, you know, like, and again, looking at IMDb credits, is that one of the ones that are listed to be in pre-production already, of which there is like seven. Werewolves of London, Strawman, Horoscopes Volume 1, Wrath of Thorn, Bannister Dollhouse, Pandemonium Incorporated, and Cleaver 3, Maximum Cleavage.
Yeah, so, well, Strawmen was a title that we put together last year as infection started to drop. We were looking to kind of shoot it in like September, October, really. We had some bad news in the family. So that delayed us by like a couple of weeks, I think. And then by the time we kind of started to pick it up again, because we have a full cast and everything, like, you know, we were in pre-production for it, really. And I think our last step was really just raising a little bit of cash to build like the puppets and costumes and things that were needed, because it's quite special effects heavy for such a small film. But we put together like a cast of like people we trusted who we knew would isolate, you know, for the time needed and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So we were taking all the precautions and, you know, we were picking people who we knew would take the risk seriously and all that kind of stuff. And so we were gearing up to go and shoot that when suddenly everything just spiked again. And so to keep everyone safe, we just said, look, you know, we've got to close it back down again. So so I think that should circumstances allow, Strawmen will be the next one that we do, because it's a very contained film, but also it was written with the restrictions in mind. So a lot of it's set outside, or it's all kind of based around people not having to stand too closely together for quite a lot of it, or things like, you know what I mean? So it's, it was written with that, you know, taken into account the risks and things like that. So I think that once we can get out, I think it's a film that we can put together relatively quickly in terms of shooting, and because we shoot a lot of practical effects stuff, that our post time really shrink because of that, because there's a much less visual effects work to do afterwards a lot of the time. So I think it's a good candidate for something that we'll go out and shoot if circumstances allow this year.
And how much can you tell us about, without giving any spoilers, how much can you tell us about the story of that? I presume it's some sort of killer scarecrow movie.
Well, it is. I think, so for years I've wanted to write a scarecrow film. And it kind of all came about really because we'd just signed a bunch of stuff over to a distributor here and in America. And Slash House 3, we realised, wouldn't be ready until kind of January of the year after, of 2020 was the initial, 2021 was our initial problem. So we said, well, that's quite a gap, because our last film was going to come out in, I think, May, from that contract that we signed. And so we were like, well, that's quite a big gap from May until January for a film not to be on shelves or whatever. So we started kind of just bouncing around something that we could do that could potentially be brought out around Halloween time. And a few years ago, we'd made a short film called The Rough Patch for our Patreon, which is like our, it's like a subscription service. I'm sure people know what Patreon is. And what we do with that is currently we do the podcast stuff with our donations, but in normal times, what we've been doing is making X amount of films, short films every year, and we've been using the Patreon to make short stuff as well as features that we make exclusively for Patreon. And one of the films we made, one of the first films I think we made actually, was called Rough Patch, and it was like a Halloween film about a killer scarecrow and this farmer who kind of is embroiled in it all. And it was just a really fun experience, and it was one of those things where I thought, oh, this would make a really good feature. But originally, I'd wanted an actor called Mark Rathbone. He was in Guy Ritchie's Gentleman. I've known him for a few years, and I've always wanted to get him something. And I kind of wrote a character based around him, but because it was like a short film that we were kind of doing over a couple of days, I thought, he'll never do that. So I didn't ask him. We just got someone to come and kind of double in for the character. And then bumped into him about 3 months after we made it at this festival we go to every year. And I mentioned it to him, said, oh, I wrote a character that you'd be perfect for. But I said, I didn't want to drag you all the way down from the north for basically two lines. And he went, oh, I absolutely would have done it. So I said, right, OK, well, if I ever turn it into a feature, you know, what do you think? And he was like, yeah, I'm there. So it was kind of like one of those things at the back of my mind where I thought, right, OK, like, so if I can kind of come up with a way to turn this into a feature length film and, then we've got Mark Rathbone right there, you know, ready to do it. And so that was kind of a bit of a, so this seemed like the perfect opportunity to do it, really, was to write something for Halloween. And then, of course, the pandemic landed. But I still kind of had this idea floating around in my head, and I realised we had like loads of time. So I just thought, right, I'll start writing it. I'll just kind of put it down on paper and see where it goes. And the story's kind of about, it's about a girl called Toby who's kind of like, she's desperate to leave her hometown, and she kind of accidentally gets caught up in like a robbery gone wrong. These guys are on the run with her as like a hostage, and they get stuck in like, they break down out in this field near an abandoned farmhouse. And then you get some kind of like, it's not like your standard kind of killer scarecrow movie, because I did a lot of research in this. I watched loads of scarecrow movies, and basically all of them are like a guy in a scarecrow suit walking around hacking people up with like a scythe or something. And so I was really conscious that I wanted to do something a bit different. And so it's really hard to talk about without giving anything away. But so it's kind of, it's got like an Evil Dead vibe a little bit. And it's kind of mixed with elements of like The Thing. And, but it still has some of those kind of slashery elements. But it's much more, I would say, of like a monster movie than it is like a slasher movie. But it does have those elements, you know. Because, that's kind of a lot of the time why people come to see our films is because they want a slasher movie. So it does have stuff like that in there. But, it's quite an exciting, idea. And it means I get to make some monsters and stuff. That's the fun part of it, I think.
Do you make the monsters yourself?
Well, between me and my wife and whoever's around, yeah, we tend to build them ourselves, yeah.
I was going to ask as well about the further on kind of slasher house. And did you, when you first made the first slasher house, was it straight away that you were like, I want to create my own cinematic universe?
It was probably about 10 years before I made slasher house, I think, that I decided that. I was just talking about it with another writer last night. It's quite a long story, but back in like the year 2000, I started writing like a novel that was kind of like, it was like a kind of like a fantasy horror, and like my idea was that I kind of wanted to, you know, kind of like do something that was kind of like a slasher movie, but on kind of like a big kind of fantastical kind of scale. And so I wrote about 100 pages of this novel. I was really, really pleased with it, how it was going. But back in the year 2000, like not many people had laptops. So I was borrowing like a laptop from like a school that my grandmother used to work at. And one day I came back and was like, where's the laptop gone? And they went, oh, they've taken it back to the school. And I was like, oh, I've got a novel on there. I need to get that off. And they were like, oh, they get wiped when they go back to the school for like data protection. And I was like, oh man, like... Jesus. So that was like a big blow to me. And like, so I thought, right, I'm going to have to start again. But I mean, in that time, I'd also been writing a lot of scripts. And what a lot of people don't mention is that writing scripts is way faster and way easier than writing like prose, you know. So I was like, I couldn't face rewriting what I'd already done. And so I was like, well, you know, maybe I could turn this into a film. So I started writing it in terms of that instead. And basically started writing this kind of like epic kind of fantasy trilogy that would, you know, that I was thinking, oh, one day I'll get to make this. But in reality, it was just much too much too big for someone like me to make. I didn't have a lot of experience in filmmaking back then. And so I started just kind of thinking about ways that I could make smaller things that were still kind of connected to it, to kind of build up to it, really. And then when I went to university, in 2005, I one day had this amazing idea that what I was going to do was make like a bunch of little no budget films. At the time I knew someone who was directly buying titles for Blockbuster. But not only that, I found out that Blockbuster, with if you pitch to them, they would they would fund these little titles. Right. So you know, like all these little no budget films that you see on the bottom of shelf in Blockbuster.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of those were funded directly by Blockbuster to have more content. And so I was like, oh, right. So I started thinking about this idea of, you know, that I could pitch to Blockbuster. And the idea was to make these kind of like little slasher movie, like, you know, or little horror movies. And I had like one based on Thorn, one based on like a character called Corbin, who's in the first movie. And then one based on a guy called Nathan, who's in the first Slasher House as well. And the idea was to kind of make like what I would call like the bottom shelf universe, where like people would be renting these titles and then they'd all cross over in a film called Slasher House. And like if people had been paying attention, they'd notice that, that character's from that film that I saw, or that character's from that film, or that character's from that film. And it just felt like a really good idea. But my problem is that I'm really like big on jumping the gun. So I had like the Thorn film that I'd been working on for like, you know, years when I was trying to think of these smaller films I could make. But I hadn't really done any work on the others outside of like a short film that starred Corbin. And so I was like, well, what if I write Slasher House first? And like, because I was really excited about the idea of all these killers kind of crossing over. And so I kind of jumped the gun a bit and was like, right, Slasher, I'm really excited about that one. You know, that's what I'm going to get to. I'm going to do all these films and we'll get to Slasher House. And I couldn't stop thinking about Slasher House. So one night in like 2005, I sat down with like a bottle of vodka and some Red Bull and I just started blasting this script out. And I had the first draft within 2 or 3 days. I was really pleased with it, but it still felt quite big. So I started thinking about how are we going to rent, you know, how are we going to get money to make this kind of thing. And so I spent like a few years just kind of working on other stuff, short films and things like that. And I decided to write like a no budget feature, which really didn't work out very well. It was finished, but never fully to completion. But during that, when I was talking to the editor, he said it's going to be about 18 months before this is ready. And I thought, oh, that's way too long, you know. So I started looking about what I had, and Slash House just kind of sat there. And I thought, you know, I bet I could make this like on very little money. And in my brain, I was thinking like, you know, I bet we could raise like, you know, $1 million to make this film, you know. So I started shopping it around, basically. And I don't know, I can't remember the exact timeline, but I think Blockbuster at this point were in like kind of dire straits.
So
I started shopping it around, trying to find investment, and we couldn't find the amount we wanted. So I started trying to, that's kind of half the price. I said, well, look, can we do it on like 500 grand? And then obviously, you know, filmmaker with very little under his belt, you know, I couldn't do that. And so I started looking for like 100 grand, and then that became like 50 grand, then 25. And at the beginning of 2010, I just kind of went, you know, what can I get hold of? Like, how much can I get hold of to make this film? And between like private investment and like a credit card and like my Argus card, I figured we had about 5 grand. And I just thought, can I do it on that? Probably not, but let's try, you know. I mean, during all this as well, Blockbuster filed for bankruptcy. So suddenly my my kind of shot at this low budget universe was like slipped through my fingers, and I thought, okay, Slash House, we'll just make Slash House. We'll just do that. We'll just go straight for it, you know, like, and I'll worry about the other stuff later, kind of thing. And so, yeah, so we did. We went in June 2010, went and shot most of, I think, 60 pages of the film. And then a year later, we managed to get the lead actress back, who's like a famous-ish B-movie star at the time called Eleanor James. So she was really busy. So it took us another year to for her to schedule us back in to shoot like another 15 pages or so of stuff with her. To finish the film off, but so it took it took about a year in all to shoot everything, and then so by the end of 2012 we had like a finished film,
and then you developed the universe from there. As it's quite forward thinking. There are like a kind of connected universe. There wasn't in terms of like, you know, pre-MCU, there wasn't much in the way of connected universes. You know, there was Trauma. There's Full Moon. There's like the Kevin Smith pictures.
Well, that's Kevin Smith. Yeah, because that was literally like, it's weird because a lot of people do say to me now, like, oh, so you're like doing the Marvel thing with horror. And I always say, well, I'm kind of doing the Kevin Smith thing, but with horror. But, you know, that's kind of the shorthand people use now. But, yeah, like, it was, for me, it was, I was always really frustrated that characters, like slasher movies especially, those characters weren't crossing over like comic books did.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I was also very frustrated with comic book movies at the time. I was like, you know, why are we not seeing Thor meet Daredevil, or, you know, why are they not making this happen? Because that's obviously what people want. And if they could make that happen, they'd make millions, you know. And I'd always go, oh, that would never work. No one would watch them all, you know, that'd be too many films to watch, or, you know, this kind of thing. Yeah. And I was like, okay, you know. But I thought, Kevin Smith's done it. He's done five films and they're all interconnected, you know. So Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back was the moment I think it really clicked for me. That I thought, yeah, you know, I could do that, you know, and it just took a few more years to really develop what it was going to be. But in 2005, I really had the kind of, I knew what it was, and I had the tone of it and everything.
I was going to say, I presume you are a kind of comic book fan, because, like, you know, Kevin Smith has talked about the VSQ universe, and like, he, you know, he's been interviewed and said like he didn't think of it as a thing. It was just how his mind worked, because he grew up with comic books and they were always crossing over, and there was always these kind of big crossover events and stuff like that. So it just made sense to him to make his movies like a comic book universe.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think, for a while, because it's quite a big thing to take on a universe as well. So, like, in the early days, when before I even made Slasher House, I would think, okay, well, I'll do, like, one set in the Myco universe, and then maybe I'll do, like, something that's just its own thing. And then, I'll do one for one. But by the time I finished Legacy of Thorn, I just said to Anna, like, you know, I've got a shit I'll get off the pot here, really. You know, and so I decided that it would just be Myco stuff I was going to do, and that was the end of it. Like, you know, but that's really freed me up as a writer, I think, as well, because now, instead of worrying about building a whole thing from scratch now, what I tend to do is sit and go, I want to tell a certain kind of story. How can I tell that in this universe? And I tend to always end up with something more interesting than I would have had I started telling that kind of story from scratch.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to ask you as well, you know, like, because I personally hadn't kind of checked out the movies before, so I was checking out a couple of the movies and stuff like that. It was the actor, Wellington Grosner, who plays Corbin. Was he at all offended that he's not, it seems like he's not had a spin-off solo feature, unlike Cleaver and Thorn and Nathan had a spin-off one as well.
Well, weirdly enough, I've just been talking to him just before I came on here. He was asking me how to transfer Hi-8 tapes to DVD. But weirdly enough, on Monday, I have an interview coming out with him where we literally agree to do the Corbin movie. So what happened really with that was that Corbin felt like suddenly like he was the bad guy in the Slasher House movie.
Yeah.
And so it was a difficult one really because I didn't have a story, like a story that I felt was feature length for him.
Okay.
And so when I was writing Slash House 2, I was like, well, what if we kind of just bring Corbin back there, you know? And then again, he's back in Slash House 3 as well. So we kind of made him like a bit of an antagonist throughout the Slash House movies instead. But when we started the Patreon, one of the reasons I even started it was that we wanted to do something called mini features, which is because there's not a lot of space for it. It's a really weird thing, but so short films are really easy to make. They don't take very long. And, you know, you can kind of put them out there fairly easily and they're very easily digestible. And then feature films, you know, you spend much longer on them. They usually take for anywhere from 6 months to a year to put together. But then at the end of that, you can usually either sell them to a distributor or sell them yourself, you know, or put them on a streaming service, or, you know, you can start to kind of recoup what you've spent on that very easily. But the problem with stories in the middle, say something that's like 45 minutes, that's a much harder sell anywhere, because where do you put that? It's not a short film that someone can just come in and look at casually. Yeah. You know, they've got to put a certain amount of time in there, but it's also not something you can sell to a distributor or anything like that. So it was, but the story I had for Corbin, like really, really sat in that area. You know what I mean? Like it was like, it wasn't a short film, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a feature length one. It was about, I would say it's about 40, 45 minute film. And so we set up the Patreon, and one of our first goals was to get to the point where we could make that this Corbin film, really, that kind of went into his backstory and where he came from. But we've just we're at £170 a month on our Patreon at the minute. So once we reach 500 a month, the idea is to make one of these mini features every year as well. But obviously it's just, we've nearly hit it a couple of times. The trouble with Patreon is that it's quite in flux all the time. So some, like when we started, we were, you know, I can't remember how much it was, but you know, we had quite a high amount coming in every month. And then obviously because it's a monthly subscription, you start to lose subscribers over time. And then when the pandemic hit, we lost quite a few. Brings it down. So now it's just, we're kind of just gradually trying to build that up again. But I have a really good story for Corbin. And he might be my favorite character of all, you know, out of all the Slash House movies and everything. Like, he's definitely the best character to write. Like, I don't have to think hardly at all when I write him. He speaks through me, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you that. I was actually going to ask if of all the killers in the Microverse, you know, which one was your favorite? I watched Slasher House and Slasher House 2 yesterday. I kind of watching them. He was a character who stood out to me. I just thought it was a kind of funny take on a slasher character. He just seemed like a kind of know-it-all pub bore who also happened to be a serial killer.
Well, it's a thing that I'd really like to explore with him, really, because what I always thought was interesting about him, that I guess it comes across a little bit in the first movie, but you know, and then I guess the scene in the second film is there to kind of cement it, but that he's like a serial killer who's an expert in other serial killers. So he's almost like a living Wikipedia of like, of working serial killers, you know, who exist in the world. And so that's how he knows who Red is and what this thing is, you know. And so I really loved that kind of idea of him. And so I'd really like to explore that as well, you know, that because he's like super intelligent and, you know, but he also knows everything about like everyone. Like he's got everyone sussed out. So, yeah, I think he'd be a really fun character to explore. And we've got a really cool story to tell with him, you know, so it's one of those things where, like I say, we talked about it in the interview I did with him a few weeks ago about, well, you know, let's make it happen once the pandemic's over. Let's see if we can make it happen, you know, this kind of mini feature. So it is there. It's been planned for quite a while, but it's just making it happen has always been difficult. Also, well, he moved to literally like the top of Scotland. And we live like just outside London. So it's the gap has suddenly been, I think it's a 16-hour drive to us.
All right. Wow. Where is he in Scotland?
The very, very top of the Highlands.
Okay.
I can't even remember what the village is called that he lives in. Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't actually live in a village. He lives in a house that's 10 miles away from a village.
Near to a village.
Like, during the pandemic, he was telling me that, like, he's not even allowed to go and get... Well, he can't, like, because of the restrictions, like, technically, he can't go and get shopping because the nearest supermarket is... more than 10 miles away.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay. And the restrictions are, you still only drive like five miles from your house.
So that's complicated things a little, but again, we talked about working that out, and obviously he's back for Slosh House 3, so, it's not a distance that, you know, will stop us from doing it if we can, so.
Okay, great. I was going to ask about Slasher House 3. I was interested in, like, obviously, at this stage, you know, before you even start filming, you don't want to give spoilers of any sort. But in terms of, like, the tone of it, like, the first Slasher House is quite serious. It almost has a structure of, like a Saw film or something like that.
Yeah, but I think
Slash Series 2 is like more like Buffy or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's weird. So yeah, the first film's definitely like a mystery, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, because with every film I try to kind of take on a different genre, even if it's a sequel to another film, I try to do something different. So the first film I kind of wrote it as a mystery, and then the second film I really wanted to do something that was like more like Blade, or, you know, like, yeah. It really leaned into the Resident Evil angle a bit more. Yeah. Because the first film was kind of heavily inspired by Resident Evil, but, you know, like you say, I think I'd just seen Saw 2 at the time and I'd been writing it, so I think a lot of that seeped into it as well.
Yeah, and because, so, like, I did think about that. When I was watching it, I did think about Saw 2, because it obviously, not either, like, that kind of first opening, like, 40 minutes or whatever, of, like, you know, just kind of going into the different rooms and all that. And yeah. Like, yeah.
I was kind of definitely in that zone at the time. I even wrote to, Darren Lynn Bozeman.
Yeah.
Afterwards, and said, like, you know, like, you kind of inspired me to make this film. He never wrote back to me, but you know, at least I told him that I'd shamelessly stolen a bunch of his work, so that was definitely an influence on the film. I really enjoyed the first two Saw movies a lot, and the rest of them, you know, but at the time those were the ones that were out. But yeah, you know, the first one really, I felt like it should have been more of a comic book movie, and it really, it was my first feature really that I'd had a chance to, I didn't have my footing as a director, I think. And so I wasn't quite as forceful with the performances. And so I did let a lot of the actors lead the tone of it a little bit, I think. And so with Slash House 2, I really wanted to correct that as well, I think, and lean much more into the comic book of it, you know, the comic book style of it, and the kind of Resident Evil, Blade kind of underworld idea that it had all kind of spawned from.
Yeah.
But I also really wanted to make like a kind of like grindhousey martial arts movie at the time. That was just kind of where my head was at. So I was like, all right, that kind of all kind of goes together. You know, if you kind of mush all that stuff together, that's, you kind of get Slash House 2. So that was my that was my thinking there. So Slasher House 3 is, it's weird. My friend calls it the Ragnarok of the Slasher House trilogy because it really, it leans a lot into the humorous side of things, but not to detract from the film, because it's really, it's definitely inspired by like 90s sci-fi. So I would say the main inspirations of it are like Judge Dredd, the 1990 movie, like Tron, and stuff like Super Mario Brothers, the motion picture. Yeah. You know, it's really, it's all that kind of stuff that I liked about that. There's a bit of a kind of Event Horizon vibe to it in places, and you know, and it's just really like sci-fi movies that I liked mostly from the 90s that have kind of seeped into it. And I mean, I don't talk about it very often, but Tron Legacy, I've talked about it all the time, but Tron Legacy is one of my favorite films of all time. So I really wanted to do something that kind of had that kind of vibe as well. And so again, I've just taken a bunch of stuff that I like, along with the kind of Resident Evil and Blade vibe, and just gone smushed it all together, and Slash House 3 kind of came out of it.
Well, this is very interesting. Yeah,
it's honestly, like, it's just an insane film. Like, even by my standards, I think we must be in mental to try and do it. Like, but it's fun.
I was curious as well. Like, so looking at the credits, Red has been a different actress in each film.
Okay.
Is this a sore subject?
I'll try and be as diplomatic as possible.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Eleanor, in like, so when she came to do reshoots on Slash House, she kind of said, you know, I'm thinking about just giving in acting and going and doing something else. I think she planned to go and get married and go and live in Germany. So I think that lifestyle wasn't going to kind of line up with doing the film stuff. Although we did talk to her about doing the second one, you know, and she wanted to, but she didn't know where she was going to be. And we decided to recast the role. and I guess it kind of became like a Deathstalker situation, where I guess the feeling I had as we were shooting the second one was, oh, it'd be nice to have maybe a different Red for every movie, like that fits the different tones, a lot like the Deathstalker movies, where each one has a kind of completely different actor playing the lead, mm-hmm. but they're all the same character. And so I thought, you know, oh, that could be interesting. And so that's kind of the direction we decided to go.
Okay. I thought it was there'd been some complicated falling out or something.
I've been very diplomatic there, you know. So that's my official answer, I guess.
Well, you know. It's
without throwing anyone under the bus, so
right. You know. Yeah, okay. We don't want to do that on this podcast. We'll keep it diplomatic. In tribute to Deathstalker, that's
the was the thing that when we realized we had to cast it first time, we thought, because I like the idea that, like, because I created Red basically, like, because at the time, she, like, especially in 2005, like, you kind of had Buffy and that was it, like, in terms of, like, I know, like, Ripley exists and Sarah Connor and, you know, those characters. But in slasher movies, you know, outside of, like, the sci-fi action genre, like, there wasn't really anybody, like, the final girl was always, like, virginal, you know, like, and, like, innocent until she had to become something super tough, you know, like, she had to face the killer at the end. And I thought, well, like, what if, like, we have someone who's been through that journey and come out the end so much that she's basically become like a serial killer who kills serial killers, you know, like, and that seemed like a really interesting idea. But also I like the idea that, you know, like, that a female audience could watch it and go, so I could be Red, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
because there's so many iterations of that character that, you know, perhaps I could, you know, I could be red or I could be red, you know. And I like that idea of, you know, of red being someone that people like, especially female viewers of the genre could look up to. And I think for the most part, that's happened. So I'm quite pleased.
Cool. Yeah. And will we, like, I mean, have you got like more ones in mind? You know, how many questions will be answered? Is this organization, are we going to find out like what the motivation in the organization is? Well, are we going to find out why Luce betrayed her at the end of the second movie? Like, what's going on?
It's hard to give too much away, but
yeah, of course.
So, Slash Out 3, the current draft is like 128 pages, because it answers every question you got.
Okay.
But that was hard because I realized that, like, coming to write it, I was like, oh man, I've got to answer a lot of questions here. And it's really easy to just kind of hint at stuff, but, you know, not actually say what it is, thinking, oh, well, I'll just answer that in the next movie. But I realized with Slash Out 1 and 2 that I really had set myself up like to answer a lot of questions. But I mean, Luce, I mean, for a lot of the film, she kind of becomes like the main character, which was when I started writing it, I didn't think that was an angle that I was going to take. Do you know what I mean? But as I started writing it, you know, that became really apparent that like a lot of this is her story as well, you know. And so that all comes together and that all makes sense, you know, and it's a lot of fun to write, you know. So there's a lot of time spent with her character in the third one. And we did a read through last year with most of the cast, and like it really became apparent to me, like not only how much fun the character of Luce is, but how much Sophie's grown as an actor since the second one. And how much she really embodies like what we're trying to do with that character. And so, you know, that feels like a good time, you know, like a good kind of culmination of stuff as well. So I'm quite excited about that. But I mean, it really does answer all your questions and then gives you more questions, you know, to go forward with. So I think, you know, but bigger questions, I guess, that don't... But it answers all the Slash House 1 and 2 questions for definite, you know.
Okay. Well, I'll look forward to my questions being answered whenever I do see the film, and whenever it's made, 2022 or whenever.
Well, yeah. I mean, who knows when it'll come out at this rate, but 2022 is what we're aiming for.
Yeah. So, like, I was looking at your IMDb, and I mean, you keep yourself. I mean, obviously, the pandemic has majorly affected everything for everybody, but you keep yourself very productive, and since Slash Your House, you know, I counted them off. You've done 9 features. For 14 shorts since 2012, so that's 9 years. That's pretty impressive. What makes you want to just keep making stuff all the time?
I don't know really. I mean, I guess once I started, I knew it was something I always wanted to do. Like, I think the big thing for me is that it is just what I was put on this earth to do, really, is what it feels like. Like, that's just in me every day. Like, you know, that's what I want to do. And that's what I do. And I'm just, every day, I just work at being better at it. Because I get as well, like, I guess, to make Slash House, like, I had to go through quite a lot of stuff, you know, like, filmmaking, it's like not a natural talent that I have. Like, I started trying to do it in like 1999 with like my first short film, and it was terrible and it didn't come naturally to me. And I was really, really worried because, you know, like it was something I really wanted to do, but I thought, I'm not very good at it at all. And so I just kept trying. And so eventually, like, I guess it just became a habit. If you know what I mean, like, until it's like now a habit that I can't break, I suppose. Because I always, all the time, I say, I have to give up. You know, it's awful. You know, like, you know, it's, it takes so much out of me. And like, I come home and I feel awful about myself. And I think, how can you go on? Like, how can I make another film after this experience or that experience? You know, and I just want to give in all the time. And then at the back of my mind, I hear it going, well, what if you did your next one on an iPhone? That could be interesting. I'm like, oh, shut up. You know, and before I know it, I'm like writing down another script or, you know, drawing something up for ideas or whatever. Like Pandemonium, after Cleavers, it was such a difficult experience because me and my wife were going through like a really bad personal time at the time. Not like we weren't getting divorced or anything, but so a couple of bad things happened to us that we couldn't really talk about publicly. So we were going through that and also trying to make a film, and you know, it was difficult. And I came out of Cleavers thinking, I can't make any more films. It just takes too much out of me. And I, you know, like, and it makes me feel exhausted with myself and other people. And, you know, and like, and then like by the end of that day, I was like, well, you know, maybe you've never made a film on an iPhone. You know, that could be really good. People are doing that now, you know. And before I know it, I was sketching out like ideas for Pandemonium. And I was like, oh, well, that's happening now, isn't it? Wonderful. Like, and so, but I mean, that was a really good experience. And so that kind of refreshed my, you know, my kind of love of making stuff again. And so, you know, then I felt empowered to go and do more stuff again. And, you know, and that does happen. And I think you go through that all the time, you know, like Slash House was a really tough experience, but I kind of came out, I enjoyed it, you know, and then stuff like Cleaver was really difficult and Hollowware was really difficult, but ultimately I had a fun time while I was making them. But then Slash House 2 was just like pulling teeth for a year. Like, you know, it was just probably one of the worst experiences you can have as a filmmaker. Like everything that can go wrong will go wrong. You know, like I think we had to recast like one role like three times or something, you know. It was just finding the right fit of people and things like that. And it just, and after that, I was like, I don't think I can make more films. Like, you know, it's awful. And then we made we got married in the January after that. And then we went on and made Mask of Thorn, and that was like a wicked experience. And I loved every second of it. And then I came out of that thing and I just want to make films. Like I'm loving it, you know? And it just, I think it's just, but it's just in me all the time. Even when I think I'm done with it, you know, it creeps back within hours and goes, well, you know, maybe try something a bit different, you know, but still do it. And I think that's where I'm at all the time.
And we're kind of talking a little bit before we started recording, and I mentioned Takeshi Miike, and now you've got something to aim for. In terms of you've got how many years did we work out that you've got to hit your 100 features?
I've got 22 years to catch up to Takeshi Miike
before you hit 60.
Yeah, well, I hit 60. He's 61, so I'm 39. So yeah. I've got that. Well, I worked it out that if I made, I think, 2.5 films a year for the next 40 years, I'll hit my target, I think. Yeah. So based on that, I have to make 5 films a year for the next 20 years to hit that target.
He's still 60 at the moment because his birthday's in August.
Oh, right. All right. So that tightens it up a bit, doesn't it, really? As well. Also, I forget that he made 100 films 2 fucking years ago. So,
So that was, he was like 58.
Oh my god.
we're shortening off time all the time.
So if I make 7 films a year for the next 20 years, you know, I'll just about make it. But I mean, it's frustrating, I think, because just after we wrapped Pandemonium, we went and sat down with some people and kind of said, look, this is what we're doing, this is what we want to do. And suddenly it looked like we were gonna have the ability to basically make, you know, 4 or 5 films a year. And I was like, excellent, you know. And not like, it was, the terms were basically, you know, it wouldn't have been, we wouldn't have been making them on scraps either. We would have had, you know, some budget to put behind this stuff. But then when the pandemic landed, like, everything's gone back up in the air again. So we don't know whether that opportunity will come round again afterwards, or, you know, or whether that was like a one-time thing and things have changed. You know, it's so it's one of these things where, so I don't know. I mean, whatever happens, I guess I'll carry on making films, because that's kind of what I do. So, yeah, you know, I think you just have to do what you like doing, really, is the big thing. So.
And was that the kind of deal you had struck with 101 Films? Is that what you're kind of referring to?
Well, they
to
were part of it, you know, in terms of a distributor. So we had, we've kind of pre-sold Slash House 3 to them before we'd even made it. And then we had two more in the pipeline with a company through them that would have, their films have been trying to get off the ground for about 10 years that need a lot more money than we ever have access to. And so that we kind of pitched a couple of films to these guys, and they were like, oh my God, these are amazing. Like, yeah, let's do it. But since the pandemic, a whole load of stuff's changed, in terms of how they run the company and who's running the company. So now it just becomes, we kind of have to wait till we can start production again before we can even start approaching that whole thing again. So it's a bit of a waiting game, really. But one thing I've learned is, because one of these films has been in pre-production for 10 years because we had a similar offer 10 years ago, nearly, you know, where we'd get a decent amount of money to go and make this film. And every year or so, we get like, oh yeah, no, we're still interested in making it happen, you know, and then nothing happens for like another year. And so I know all too well that people offer and, you know, these things don't work out. And so I've always got my eye on just doing the work myself, you know. And so that's I think is the most important thing, because I think it's more important to be actively doing something than sat waiting for the money to be doing something.
Yeah, and I was also going to say, I mean, you're doing all sorts of stuff, you know, it's checking out the website, you know, you're a full multimedia company, you got your podcasts, you got comics, you're doing your films, and also it looks like you have a line of action figures in the pipeline. Yeah. When can we see them?
Well, I know this is an audio podcast, so I know other people at home can't see this, but I'll turn the video on for a second. And we have one of the prototypes here.
I can confirm, audience. I'm then looking at one of the toys. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
We had the Cleaver prototype.
Very nice.
Done middle of last year. So that the plan for that was to send him out in to start producing a limited run of that in January, it's a character that's obviously based on the actor that died in December. And so that kind of put a bit of a stop on everything. And last year, one of the other things we do is we release VHS versions of our films.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a run of Legacy of Thorn in February, just before the pandemic struck. And so that really suddenly like messed everything up, because we couldn't, we didn't know when we were going to be able to post stuff. We couldn't get stuff delivered to put the stuff together. And so that was delayed by months. And although people were really understanding about it, as a company who wants to deliver, I really felt so uncomfortable the whole time, that people had paid for something that we were then delayed in delivering. And so, so we decided that we were going to wait and see how the land lies before we put anything out like that again. So we've delayed it until we've kind of got a better idea of what's going on, before we start doing kind of limited pre-orders of these things again. But our plan was to launch it at Horror on Sea in January. And of course that didn't happen. So,
yeah,
so we're kind of just sitting on it at the minute and seeing what happens now. I mean, maybe we might do something around Halloween, because we talked about doing a figure a year and doing a run kind of early on in the year and then doing like a Halloween variant of each one. So that might be something we still consider down the line. And we might start with the Halloween stuff first. It's just really seeing how it goes. Because it's quite a complex situation. Because like making DVDs and videos and stuff is difficult, but you know, a fairly straightforward process. But making action figures it's taken years of prototyping and, you know, and figuring it all out and 3D sculpting and re-sculpting and then printing and seeing what's wrong and re-sculpting and, you know, it's an insane process that I never thought I'd have to go through. But I'm kind of glad I did.
Oh, that's really cool. I think it goes, seeing the action figures is pretty good. And, pretty cool when the rest of the line comes out, or like, you know, when you've got them. And I suppose it just leaves me to say thank you very much for coming on the show, talking all about the Microverse, and come back on again, whenever like Strawman comes out, or like talk more about Slasher House 3, or you know, the continuing unfolding story of the Microverse. I'd be happy to talk to you more about it with you again.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be amazing.
That was my guest, MJ, there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. And as always, I'd like to thank you, listener, for tuning in to this latest episode of New Horror Express. And remember, if you like what you heard, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. Oh yeah, and if you're leaving a review, make it 5 stars, because apparently out there in podcast algorithm land, anything less than 5 stars is utter garbage. Yeah, it doesn't make a lick of sense to me either, but that is exactly how it is. So 5 stars, folks. Just remember. Unfortunately, that's all for this time, but be sure to join me next Monday when I will have another great guest from the world of indie horror. Until then, though, see ya.